So we'll read the summary of the second chapter of the 10th canto, Prayers by the Demigods for Lord Krishna in the Womb. As described in this chapter, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead entered the womb of Devaki to build Kamsa, all the demigods understood that the Lord was living within Devaki's womb, and therefore in veneration they offered him the garba stuti prayers. Kamsa, under the protection of his father-in-law, Jarasandha, and with the help of his demoniac friends like Pralamba, Baka, Chanura, Trinavarta, Agasura, Mustika, Bana, and Bomasura, began oppressing the members of the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, the members of the Yadu dynasty left their homes and sought shelter in such states as Kuru, Panchala, Kekeya, Salva, and Vidarbha. Only some of them stayed with Kamsa as nominal friends. After Kamsa killed the Satgarbhas, the six sons of Devaki, one after another, Anantadev entered Devaki's womb and was transferred to the womb of Rohini by the manipulation of Yogamaya, who was following the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord himself, who was soon to appear as the eighth son of Devaki, ordered Yogamaya to take birth from the womb of Yasoda Devi. Because Krishna and his potency Yogamaya appeared simultaneously as brother and sister, the world is full of Vaishnavas and Shaktas, and there's certainly some rivalry between them. Vaishnavas worship the Supreme Lord, whereas Shaktas, according to their desires, worship Yogamaya in forms like Durga, Bhadrakali, and Chandika. Following the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya transferred Baladev, Sankarsan, the seventh child of Devaki, from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. Because Sankarsan appears in order to increase love of Krishna, he is known as Ram. One may take auspicious strength from him to become a devotee of the Lord, and therefore he is also known as Balabhadra. After Yogamaya transferred the seventh child of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared within the heart of Vasudev and transferred himself into the heart of Devaki. Because the Lord was present in her heart, Devaki, as her pregnancy continued, appeared effulgent. Upon seeing this effulgent, Kamsa was full of anxiety, but he could not harm Devaki because of their family relationship. Thus he began indirectly thinking of Krishna and became fully Krishna conscious. Meanwhile, because of the Lord's presence within the womb of Devaki, all the demigods came to offer the Lord their prayers. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, they said, is eternally the absolute truth. The spiritual soul is more important than the gross body, and the super soul, Paramatma, is still more important than the soul. The Supreme Godhead is absolutely independent, and his incarnations are transcendental. The prayers of the demigods glorify and exalt devotees and explain the fate of persons who superficially consider themselves liberated from the conditions of material life. A devotee is always safe. When a devotee fully surrenders at the lotus feet of the Lord, he is completely liberated from the fear of material existence. By explaining why the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends, the prayers of the demigods clearly confirm the statement in Bhagavad Gita 4:7, Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam sirjaminam. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in a religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So Krishna appeared in the pure mind of Vasudev, a mind that is known as Visuddhasattva, a mind situated in transcendental goodness. And from that state of pure goodness, there the Supreme Lord could enter into that consciousness, and then was transferred from the consciousness of Vasudev to the consciousness of Devaki, or from the heart of Vasudev to the heart of Devaki. And it was in that way that the Supreme Lord was conceived. That state of pure consciousness, that state of being completely dedicated to whatever Krishna desires, that state of having no personal agenda, that is the state of the pure devotee. And Vasudev was such a personality. Both Vasudev and Devaki had performed austerity in their previous life. And it was because of this austerity that the Supreme Lord had agreed to appear as their son. When he did so, it was totally bewildering, because he appeared clearly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He appeared with four arms, helmet, full dress, and ornaments, and so on. And so Vasudev offered prayers and was deeply moved that actually the Supreme Lord appeared. Devaki, she offered prayers, but her prayers were, please now, change this form and take the form of an ordinary child, you know, so that at least Kamsa will not immediately understand that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because otherwise he might kill you. So, in this way, Devaki was not able to fully understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yet she did understand who he was. But due to motherly affection, she was not exactly acting in a reasonable manner. Then upon her request, Krishna took the son of a child. And of course, then Vasudev, he quickly took the child. And somehow or other, they had been chained to the wall, but the chains came loose, and everyone in the palace was sleeping. So Vasudev managed to get out of the building, and he came to the Yamuna, and there had been a rain, and the Yamuna was very large, and it looked impossible to cross. But then Vasudev saw a jackal walking across, and he followed that path of the jackal, and in this way he carried Krishna across the Yamuna. As he came to Vrindavan, then Yasoda had just given birth, and it is said she'd given birth to a girl, and Vasudev exchanged the children and took the girl and went back to Mathura. Some acharyas have said that if Vasudev was in pure goodness and so transcendental, then how could he just sacrifice that girl, right? Drop Krishna off in Vrindavan and take the girl and give the girl to Kamsa. How could he do it? That question is raised. But it is said that he did it not because he was under the modes of material nature, but he did it because of great attachment to Krishna. And due to that attachment to Krishna, he didn't think properly. So it never crossed his mind that he's putting the girl in trouble. He was so much thinking about saving Krishna that was all he could think of, and everything else was just not there. So his brain didn't work like that of an ordinary person. Anyway, somehow or other, Krishna then was saved, and Krishna continued to grow up in Vrindavan and perform pastimes in Vrindavan. And of course, These were simply the pastimes of the spiritual world. Krishna descends to this planet, and Krishna is showing his eternal pastimes of the spiritual sky. There's no question of taking birth. There's no question of a beginning of these pastimes, because these pastimes are going on eternally. So in this way, Krishna's opulence is there. There's no limit to his opulence. Now, on the day before Janmashtami, the demigods were preparing for his appearance. Yes, Bhumi, the earth, had been greatly aggrieved by the presence of so many unwanted material phalanxes that were a burden to the earth, and so Bhumi had gone before Lord Brahma and told her tale of lamentation, and Lord Brahma was indeed seeing that her condition was impossible. So Lord Brahma agreed. He agreed to speak to her behalf, on her behalf, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they went along with all the demigods to the ocean of milk. And somehow or other, Lord Brahma had that ability to telepathically connect with the Lord. Although the Lord was far away on the ocean of milk, Lord Brahma could communicate and also receive the communication of the Supreme Lord. The demigods could not hear such a thing. And then the Lord told that soon the demigods should appear in the Yadu dynasty, because soon he himself would appear in the Yadu dynasty. So it is said that Balaram, as the seventh incarnation of the Lord, had already appeared. That is not counting in the Bhagavatam. It is said that Krishna and Balaram are number 19 and 20 amongst the incarnations of the Lord, but that is counting the Shakti Avesh avatars also, the empowered living entities, like the four Kumaras, for example, or or others like Buddha. But Balaram then counts as the seventh incarnation of Vishnu, and Krishna as the eighth. And Balaram first entered into the womb of Devaki and expanded himself as Sesha, and Balaram stayed there and arranged for a bed for Krishna to be there, so that Krishna, when he would be there, had a place to rest and everything. So he set up the furniture, and then Krishna could sort of appear and stay in the womb of Devaki being comfortable. So all this is before the appearance of the Lord, and so we are thinking also a little bit about before the appearance of the Lord. The demigods were now in anticipation. The demigods were now considering that this would be the end of the demoniac rule of Kamsa, which had so much oppressed the entire universe. Brahmanas had not been able to perform proper sacrifice. The demigods had not been receiving their proper oblations, and therefore had not received proper punya from all these rituals. So their stock of punya was depleting. Normally the demigods, they reside in the heavenly planets, and they stock up on punya by receiving oblations that are offered, and the demigods are getting the punya. Sometimes we hurt that why are we covering the beats when we chant? Why are we covering our hands when we chant Gayatri? Some said, because the demigods will steal the punya. We say, let them steal the punya. We don't want punya. We want the eternal benefit of Krishna. That is our interest. Yeah. Somehow or other, we don't measure the result of our devotional service in terms of benefit. How much benefit am I getting from these activities? How much benefit am I getting from this chanting? How much benefit am I getting from my devotional service? The only benefit that we desire is that Krishna thinks favorably of us. That somehow or other Krishna becomes attracted to our devotional service. But we're not measuring how much benefit. Somehow or other, we hope, let Krishna notice my existence. Let Krishna then, Krishna who is very merciful, Krishna who is very kind, Krishna who is noticing the smallest devotional service rendered, he's achyuta, let that Krishna somehow or other develop some appreciation for that devotional service. Because devotional service is always aimed for the pleasure of Krishna. Devotional service is given to us by the Vaishnavas. It is by the mercy of the Vaishnavas that there is devotional service. Otherwise, where would we be? It is by the mercy of the Vaishnavas that now we are here today observing the few days of celebration of Jamashtami. We could not be here if not for the mercy of the Vaishnavas. So that is how devotional service begins. And that devotional service, mukti didati bhakti na karichit, that devotional service is purchasing Krishna. It purchases Krishna. So therefore, yes, we want to purchase Krishna. We want to attract Krishna. That is the objective of devotional service, to somehow or other attract Krishna. It is also said by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that one meaning of the word Krishna is Krishna means all attractive, we heard. But another meaning of the name Krishna is he who is attracted by devotional service. Yeah. So that's the meaning we are taking now on the eve of Janmashtami. We wish to attract Krishna by our devotional service. Even the observance of Janmashtami is that. It is another form of devotional service. A day of making special endeavor to chant the name, fame, glory, pastimes of Krishna, to somehow or other, in that way, please Krishna. And if we do so, that then Krishna may manifest in our heart. So, Janmashtami is simply for that purpose. In one sense, every day is equally important to Janmashtami. What is the difference if we celebrate the day that Krishna performed his pastime of appearing in this world, of coming through the consciousness, the pure consciousness of Vasudev to the heart of Devaki? What is the difference in remembering the pastimes of Krishna this day and remembering other pastimes on other days? What's the difference? Every pastime of Krishna is equally transcendental, equally potent, and equally full of mercy. It doesn't matter. We can also remember Krishna in Kurukshetra, and it's equally potent. What is the difference between remembering Jamashtami or remembering any pastimes of Krishna? So there is no difference. All of Krishna's activities are 100% transcendental. But because we are not transcendental, yes, we need to take advantage of such days for rendering special service. There are many things that we are doing for ourselves. For example, I read one article from a professor who had studied temple worship and who said, why is it that before they go into the temple, they ring a bell? Why? Is it that their Lord is asleep? The professor was asking. Wrong, professor, wrong. It's not because the Lord is asleep, it's because whoever goes in the temple is asleep. And we're waking up ourselves as we're ringing the bell. Right? Ding, ding, ding. You're going in the temple. Oh yeah, yeah. It's transcendental. In this way, we are preparing. And so now, we're preparing. We're preparing to remember that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He appeared fully dressed with full ornaments and helmet, yellow dhoti and all. He appeared as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Everything about him is completely pure. And everything about him is purifying the heart of all of us. Every moment. Therefore, the actual essence is to hear about Krishna. It doesn't matter what we hear about Krishna, but to hear about Krishna and to intensify that hearing about Krishna. So, Madhavatiti Bhakti Janani. Then we're using these appearance pastimes of the Lord, or all the pastimes related to the Lord that we commemorated on a particular date. We use these dates to simply increase our hearing and chanting. That's all. So that is our purpose tomorrow. To make offerings to the Lord, to spend time hearing. Some people, they hear about Krishna's pastimes from the Krishna book. We can really begin everywhere and anywhere. One chapter I like in the Krishna book is the 70th chapter, which is called Lord Krishna's Daily Activities. Sukadev Goswami said, as dawn approached, the wives of Lord Madhava, each embraced around the neck by her husband, cursed the crowing roosters. The ladies were disturbed that now they would be separated from him. The bees buzzing caused by the fragrant breeze from the Parijata garden roused the birds from sleep, and when the birds began to sing loudly, they woke Lord Krishna like court poets reciting his glories. Lying in her beloved's arms, Green Vaidarbhi did not like this most auspicious hour, for it meant she would lose his embrace. It's interesting how normally birds in the morning are glorifying the sun. As soon as it gets light, the birds, they begin to sing, and they sing like the glories of the sun, the glories of the day. But now, the birds are really glorifying the real sun, Surya Narayan, because it is Narayan who supplies the unlimited energy to the sun. So now the birds have actually understood. Now they sing the glories of Krishna, and they awoke Krishna like court poets reciting his glories. Krishna, of course, could understand that bird poetry because Krishna speaks all the languages. Right? So to us it may have sounded like chirping, but to Krishna, he definitely understands. Lying in her beloved's arm, Queen Vidarbi did not like this most auspicious hour, for it meant she would lose his embrace. So Rukmini is the principal queen and the first one, and she represents all the other queens, and all the queens were unhappy with this beginning of the day and the end of the night, and that now Krishna would get up, because they knew he would get up. Rukmini is the principal queen. It is interesting that Rupa Goswami has written two plays. One play is known as the Vidakta Madhava, and the other play is known as the Lalita Madhava. Now, it is said that Rupa Goswami was first going to write one play about all the pastimes of Krishna. And as he was traveling, he came to a place named Satyabhamapur, a place dedicated to Satyabhama. And in that Satyabhamapur, he had a dream. And in that dream, this effulgent lady appeared, and she told him, "Oh, you are going to write one play about the pastimes of Krishna? No. Oh no. No, you should not write one play. You should write two plays. One about the pastimes in Vrindavan, one about the pastimes out of Vrindavan." So Rupa Goswami then took it that Satyabhama had appeared and that Satyabhama had ordered him. Alright, so then he writes these two plays. In the Vidakta Madhava, we get the Vrindavan pastimes, and we see how Radha and Krishna are both experiencing great separation and are trying to meet in the forest, and it takes some time and difficulty to overcome before that finally happens. And then we're continuing to the Lalita Madhava. So in the beginning of the Lalita Madhava, there is a description where it is still in Vrindavan, but now at this point, Krishna has left Vrindavan. And when Krishna has left in Vrindavan, then all the residents of Vrindavan don't see any point to stay alive. And, you know, and for a long time, Srimati Radharani was battling on the borderline of birth and death, or of life and death, the borderline. And finally, she went over the edge, and Srimati Radharani died. Then, when Srimati Radharani died, that was such a shock that many others died as well. And it's like, you know, that's Lalita Madhava, and you may not have expected that, but suddenly they all die. Then what happens is they all come back as the queens of Krishna in Dwarka. And it is Chandravali who comes back as Rukmini. And Radharani, she comes back as Satyabhama. She comes back as Satyabhama. Satyabhama Satyabhama is the rebellious queen of Krishna. She is the one with the strong character. Oh, Satyabhama. She is not one to be quiet when it's time to speak the truth. Satyabhama speaks out. Satyabhama is younger than Rukmini, and in a sense, more beautiful. So that is a little bit, you know, there's always the second, you know, younger queen, you know, that one. And at least you often find that in these narrations. So there is some rivalry there. There is some rivalry. So Rukmini, being the one that is the principal queen, the one who married Krishna first, right? Therefore, she's senior most. There's a whole hierarchy amongst these queens. What do you think? That 16,108 queens are all equal? You're in illusion. Forget it. No way. Oh, no. Rukmini is the senior most queen. Sometimes Krishna then treats her also respectfully. Sometimes Krishna will speak to her and say, and what would Her Majesty like to say? You know, even Krishna refers to her with honorific titles and so on. And then Krishna and Satyabhama, it's just the same like in Vrindavan. Once again, it is the same once again. Stolen moments when Rukmini is not around. And whenever Rukmini is around, then Krishna cannot sit alone with Satyabhama. Oh, no question. And then the queen has come. Yes, my queen. Oh, like this. It's interesting how the same ras continues there again. Once again, the same mood of Vrindavan. Yes, Jiva Goswami explains. There Krishna is speaking in Gopal Champu, and Krishna is saying, that I have concluded that the queens of Dwarka are the expansions, and that the residents of Vrindavan are the originals. He says, because when I'm with the residents of Dwarka, I just remember the residents of Vrindavan. And when I'm with the residents of Vrindavan, I never think of the residents of Dwarka at all. In this way, Krishna has concluded that actually the original forms are the forms of Vrindavan. Yes, just like Krishna himself has expanded himself in the form of Vasudev Krishna, and that the original form is the form in Vrindavan. That form of Vasudev Krishna is the expansion of the form of Krishna in Vrindavan. And in this way, we see. But yet, when Krishna expands himself, all Vishnu Tattva is one. It's not that they are two separate forms. All Vishnu Tattva is one. Yes. Therefore, Krishna is known as Avatari. He is known as the origin of all avatars. All the avatars reside within him. And yet he is Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami, the original Adipurush, or Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Satsidananda Vigraha Anadira Dir Govinda Sarvakarna Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. He has no other origin than himself. All other forms, yes, they have their origin in Krishna. Dipachireva hida santramavya pecha dipayateva vrittahena samana dharma yastadrikeva hita vishnu tayor vibhati govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. As one can light from one original candle many other candles. So even Vasudev Krishna was lit from Krishna, is Krishna's expansion, now in a different form. Therefore, Vrindavana Parichaya Padam Ekam Nagacchati. Therefore, Krishna never sets foot out of Vrindavan. He never goes one step. Padam Ekam Nagacchati. Does not go one step, it says, out of Vrindavan. That is the case. So Krishna is like that. Now, still, he's lying there on the bed, very tired. He doesn't want to wake up. Minnesota is thinking, these coward boys, they are so rough. They just play with him all day, and look how exhausted he is. I mean, he's a prince. He's not meant to be there in the forest. I told him so many times, he doesn't need to go to the forest to herd the cows. He doesn't. He can just send some servants. But he insists on going. And just see. And look what they did to him then. And sort of, he's got scratches all over his body. And why is he wearing Balaram's blue dhoti? Yes. Anyway, as he's still sleeping, she begins to massage his body with Mahanarayan oil. It's very good oil. What other oil could it be? Had to be Mahanarayan oil, Ayurvedic Mahanarayan. So she serves him and massages his whole body with Mahanarayan oil. That wakes him up a little bit. Then Krishna will hear the loud mowing sounds of the cows. The cows who need to be milked. The others are full and the cows are not willing to be milked. No one can come near them. Horns for anybody who's coming close. So no one is trying. And so the coward boys are also waiting. So Krishna then, even before taking his bath, he goes down to milk the cows. Just to relieve the cows, because, his bath is one thing, but of course bath should be there, but the discomfort of the cows. No, cows cannot wait. So Krishna goes and milks the cows. Back to Dwarka. The most saintly of personalities would then bathe in sanctified water, dress himself in lower and upper garments, and perform the entire sequence of prescribed rituals, beginning with worship at dawn. After offering oblations into a sacred fire, Lord Krishna would silently chant the Gayatri Mantra. Krishna, meanwhile, in Vrindavan, Yasoda has made all the arrangements for his bath, and the cowherd boys are coming in and they are taking part in the Abhishek. And everyone is just pouring water over Krishna. And the gopis are getting ready, getting his clothes ready, etc. And Mother Yasoda is already, after the bathing, ready to dry him personally. And, it's nothing to do with ritual. It's more got to do with everybody. Everybody is there trying to somehow or other render some service to Krishna. And Krishna is lovingly reciprocating. Back to Dwarka. Each day the Lord worshipped the rising sun and propitiated the demigods, sages and forefathers, who were all his expansions. The self-possessed Lord would then carefully worship his elders and the brahmanas. To those well-attired brahmanas, he would offer herds of tame and peaceful cows with gold-plated horns and pearl necklaces. These cows were also dressed in fine cloth, and the fronts
of their hooves were plated with silver. Providers of abundant milk, they'd each given birth only once and were accompanied by their calves. Daily the Lord gave many groups of 13,084 cows to the learned brahmanas, together with linen, deerskins, and sesame seeds. In this way, Krishna in Dwarka begins his days by worshipping the rising sun and and offering oblations to the demigods, sages, forefathers. He pays off all his debts in that way. Devarsi bhutaptaninam pitrinam. He offers oblations to all these personalities. And then he would worship the elders, the brahmanas, give away herds of tame, peaceful cows with gold-plated horn, pearl necklaces. And in this way, Krishna began the day auspiciously, performing the activities of Dharma perfectly, and in that way performing perfect sadhana. In Vrindavan, Krishna is, after he has taken his bath and after he has been dressed by Mother Yasoda, oh, he cannot wait any longer. The cowherd boys, they have been up for ages, for ages. The cowherd boys got up in the middle of the night, right, and they woke up with all the hairs on their bodies standing on end in ecstasy. In ecstasy they were, these cowherd boys. Oh yes, just thinking about Krishna and about meeting Krishna. So, yes, Krishna doesn't worship. Krishna goes and joins his friends. And then everyone gets ready. And yes, Nanda Maharaj has so many cows. And he has stables filled with beautiful white cows. And he has other stables filled with black buffaloes. And then when it is time to go to the forest, all these herds are now coming out of the stables. And it is as if the Ganga, the white river, flows in the form of the cows. And the black river, the Yamuna, flows in the form of the stream of buffaloes. And in this way, Krishna and his cowherds, friends, and his calves and cows are getting ready for another day in the forest, and they're eager to go. Meanwhile, in Dwarka, Lord Krishna would offer obeisances to the cows, brahmanas, and demigods, his elders and spiritual masters, and all living beings, all of whom are expansions of his Supreme Personality. Then he would touch auspicious things. He would decorate his body, the very ornament of human society, with his own special clothes and jewelry, with divine flower garlands and ointments. He would then look at ghee, a mirror, the cows and bulls, the brahmanas and the demigods, and see to it that the members of all the social classes living in the palace and throughout the city were satisfied with gifts. After this, he would greet his ministers, gratifying them by fulfilling all their desires. After first distributing flower garlands, pan and sandalwood paste to the brahmanas, he would give these gifts to his friends, ministers and wives, and finally he would partake of them himself. By then, the Lord's driver would have brought his supremely wonderful chariot, yoked with Sugriva and other horses. His charioteer would bow down to the Lord and then stand before him. So it looks that Krishna in Dwarka is also about to go out. What do you think? It seems to be, now that his chariot has appeared. Meanwhile, in Vrindavan, no chariot, and no, Krishna is now walking towards the forest. But, oh, his elders are difficult to persuade. They also come. And of course, how can you have fun with your friends when your parents are there all the time watching? That doesn't work. You need to sometimes escape from the parental supervision. Oh yes. So Krishna is thinking about that. And finally he says to Mother Yasoda, he says, "Oh, what will we eat for lunch? When we'll be in the forest, we'll surely be hungry, but no one is cooking. If you're not cooking, what will we eat? We cannot eat anything else." So Yasoda can see the logic. Yeah, that is true. And Yasoda goes home. And of course, Yasoda makes amazing lunch packages. I mean, each prep is far out. But not only are Yasoda's lunch packages like that, what about the lunch packages of all the other cowherd boys? Everybody knows that the cowherd boys have this game of stealing each other's lunch packages. Oh yes. And Krishna is also partaking in the stealing of these lunch packages. And these lunch packages are packed up with goodies. Ooh, very goody good. Oh yes, because what if Krishna will steal the lunch packet of my son today? And Krishna will open up and say, "Oh, what you have there? What if? Therefore everyone puts the best of the best. Because it could be that Krishna will steal the lunch packages. I don't know what Krishna's going to have for lunch in Dwarka, but we remember his charioteer had bowed before him, so let's have a look what's going to happen. Holding on to his charioteer's hands, Lord Krishna would mount the chariot together with Satyaki and Uddhava, just like the sun rising over the easternmost mountain. The palace women would look upon Lord Krishna with shy, loving glances, and thus he would get free from them only with difficulty. He would then set off, his smiling face captivating their minds. The Lord, attended by all, would enter the Sudharma assembly hall, which protect those who enter it from the six waves of material life, dear King. Okay, these six waves are known as the Sat-Urmi. The Sat-Urmi are the six waves of material existence, or also sometimes known as the six whips of material existence, and they are known as hunger, thirst, lamentation, infirmity, disease, and death. See? So, in this way, that Sudharma assembly house is pretty good, because whenever you're in there, you never get sick. Okay, and you don't get older. So some people would spend a lot of time in that Sudharma house, naturally. Everyone would volunteer to be there. A good place. But that was not the main reason. That was not the main reason to be there. For us it would be. But the main reason was that Krishna was there every day. And it wasn't just some sort of meetings, you know. I mean, Krishna said goodbye to his wives and now he's off to work. It sounds like that, right? It really sounds like Krishna's off to work. What do you think? He's off to the Sudharma assembly house and there they're all waiting for him. It's going to be another day of governments, you know. Since he's the king, you know, right? Well, or from the royal family at least, you know. I mean, what are we going to do about this? So let's find out. And he took Satyaki with him, his military commander. So it kind of looks like they're going to talk some business there. Meanwhile, I wonder what's going on in Vrindavan. I mean, Krishna and his cowherd boy friends, have now reached the forest. And what are they doing? They do all kinds of things, like eating fruits from trees and sporting also with fruits, like even Even football is a sport of the spiritual world, right? Because they play football with amalaki fruits, which are like balls, yes. So, you know, if you like football, then we have some excuse. Yes. Anyhow, so Krishna's having a good time. But not only that. Also, there are big dramatic performances. Sometimes the cowherd boys perform plays for Krishna in the forest. They all dress up in costumes and so on and do a whole drama. Right? So in this way, it's not just every day just imitating frogs and other animals in the forest. No, no. There's a lot of variety. Sometimes even plays. Meanwhile, in Dwarka, Krishna went to the royal assembly house. And there, as the Almighty Supreme Lord would seat himself upon his exalted throne there in the assembly hall in Vrindavan, as Krishna would sit down on the root of the Bandira tree. The Bandira tree is a very large tree, which was the favorite tree or the favorite destination of the cowherd boys. When Krishna was about to disappear from this planet, the Bandira tree did not want to stay. Therefore, the Bandira tree also decided to go back to the spiritual world. But the Bandira tree was enormous, and its roots were so large that there were many tunnels and many hiding places. And the cowherd boys would just hide, or sometimes Krishna would just sit on one of the roots. Then there were branches that were so extensive. One of the large branches was extending all the way over the Yamuna. And Krishna and the cowherd boys were using these branches as a bridge to get to the other side. Yes, that is the way. The way of cowherd boy life is that they discover their own ways, their own toys. They don't buy plastic toys from the shop. Oh no, they invent their own toys. Oh yes, they make their own. And they cross the river not by a bridge, but by a tree. Of course, because they are cowherd boys after all. Oh yes, they cover the jewels that their mothers have put upon them with leaves and fruits from the forest. There, because those are more valuable. Because they're from the most valuable place in the universe, from the forest where Krishna performs pastimes with them. What place is more valuable? Some jewels from some mines? Glitter, glitter. What's the benefit of that? From some ordinary place? No. Things from the forest where Krishna is performing pastimes with them. From the most valuable place. Everything from that forest is the greatest treasure. And so they cover those ugly jewels with beautiful leaves and beautiful flowers and whatever they have from that forest. They put colored pigments from the forest over their body, and like this, they decorate themselves. So now we're back in that Sudharma assembly house. And there, O King, jesters would entertain the Lord by displaying various comic moods. Expert entertainers would perform for him, and female dancers would dance energetically. These performers would dance and sing to the sounds of mridangas, veenas, murajas, flutes, cymbals, and conch shells, while professional poets, chroniclers, and panegyrists would recite the Lord's glories. Some brahmanas sitting in the assembly hall would fluently chant Vedic mantras, while others recounted stories of past kings of pious renown. Once a certain person arrived in the assembly, O King, who had never been seen there before, the doorkeepers announced him to the Lord and then escorted him inside. That's in Dwarka. Meanwhile, in Vrindavan, oh, so many pastimes were performed, sometimes plays, sometimes even dramas and dancers were there. Oh yes, Madhu Mangal would dance and everyone would laugh. Yeah. Oh yes. But then, one day, unannounced, after all, in Vrindavan things are not so formal like in Dwarka, unannounced, one personality just entered into the pastimes of Krishna and just was right there. It's like, what is happening? We will have to wait, because first we're going back to Dwarka. So someone had come and the doorkeepers escorted him inside. That person bowed down to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and with joined palms he described to the Lord how a number of kings were suffering because Jarasandha had imprisoned them. 20,000 kings who had refused to submit absolutely to Jarasandha during his world conquest had been forcibly imprisoned by him in the fortress named Girivraja. The king said, as related to their messenger, O Krishna, Krishna, O immeasurable soul, destroyer of fear, for those surrendered unto you, despite our separatist attitude, we've come to your shelter out of fear of material existence. Yes, when Krishna is in Dwarka, he performs the eternal activities that every incarnation of the Lord performs. Paritaranaya sadhanam vinasya saduskritam dharma samstarpanartya sambhavami yuge yuge. Yes, Krishna is appearing in this world and he is annihilating demons. And he is protecting his devotees. That is his business, as is the business of every incarnation of the Lord, every avatar. So yes, Krishna also. And now this Brahmana messenger came and invited Krishna to take up this work. Meanwhile, in Vrindavan, that one person who had entered into the pastimes of Krishna had taken the form of a cowherd boy. Ah! Krishna, who would know every cowherd boy, although there were unlimited cowherd boys. Nonetheless, Krishna immediately spotted him and said, Ah! Welcome, my friend. You are new. Oh, welcome amongst us. Very nice that you came. Yes, we will be performing some transcendental play today here in the forest. Ah, said the cowherd boy. That will be wonderful. I'm so happy to be here. And Krishna then announced to all. He said, yes, we will have a competition and we will divide up in pairs. And the losers have to carry the winners. Meanwhile, in Dwarka, they were not sitting still either. People in this world are always engaged in sinful activities and thus bewildered about their real duty, which is to worship you according to your commandments. This activity would truly bring them good fortune. Let us offer obeisances unto the all-powerful Lord, who appears as time and suddenly cuts down one's stubborn hope for a long life in this world. So we see in Dwarka Lord Krishna is worshipped in a royal fashion. It is remembered that he is all-powerful. It is remembered that he is also, in as the all-powerful, that in his most powerful manifestation in the material world, he's manifesting himself as time. Because we see the greatest powers in this world, but the greatest power of all is actually time. And so, Krishna, Kalaham Lokaksaya Krit, time I am, destroyer of worlds, Krishna says. But Krishna also says, Ekam Sena Stito Jagat, that he pervades this entire universe only with a spark of his splendor. So how can we understand Krishna's unlimited glories when he only shows a spark? In this world, there is so much more to see. Meanwhile, in Vrindavan, oh yes. Oh, Krishna then, in Vrindavan, he saw this cowherd boy, and he knew straight away what his intentions were. Although Krishna himself appeared like a cowherd boy, he is always the all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's always fully omnipotent. Just like in Dwarka, everyone may know that Krishna is all-powerful. In Vrindavan, not everyone may know, but nonetheless he is. Although, sometimes even he himself doesn't know. How is that? That question will be answered a little later. Because we first have to really go back to Dwarka and find out what is going on. Oh Lord, with this corpse-like body always full of fear, we bear the burden of the relative happiness of kings, which is just like a dream. Thus we have rejected the real happiness of the soul, which comes by rendering selfless service to you. Being so very wretched, we simply suffer in this life under the spell of your illusory energy. The kings wrote a very dramatic letter. Therefore, since your feet relieve the sorrow of those who surrender to them, please release us, prisoners from the shackles of karma, manifest as the king of Magadha, wielding alone the prowess of 10,000 maddened elephants. He's locked us up in his house, just as a lion captures sheep. O wielder of the disc, your strength is unlimited, and thus 17 times you crushed Jarasandha in battle, but then absorbed in human affairs, you allowed him to defeat you once. Now he's so filled with pride that he dares to torment us, your subjects. O unconquerable one, please rectify this situation. I tell you, it's heating up in both places. It's heating up in both places. Let us quickly rush back to Vrindavan, because there we had this burning question. This burning question that Krishna is omnipotent, but even he sometimes seems to forget. We know by now who that demon was. Palumba was your typical muscle type, you know? I mean, the macho, the guy like the hey baby type, you know? Right? You know? And Palumba was into physical strength and into sex. That's what it says. That was what he was all about. Right? So, Pralamba was thinking that Krishna has already killed quite a few demons. Putana, Trinavarta, Sakatasura, Bakasura, and so many other powerful demons. He was thinking, no, I will not go that route. But Kamsa has sent me here, and comes if I don't do anything, Kamsa will kill me. So I must do something. But what I'll do is I'll take Balaram. So Pralambasura, he took Balaram. And as he took Balaram, it was the game, the losers. Pralambasura is with the losing party, Balaram the winning party, and Pralambasura had to carry Balaram. And that he did very happily. He carried Balaram, and then what happened? You may still remember the story from Balaram's appearance day, which was not very long ago. But possibly, in case you forgot, think about it for a moment, what happened. And there might be a detail that you have missed on Balaram's appearance day because of weakness due to fasting. You fell asleep at that moment during the lecture. Yes. So? Ha ha ha. And in Dwarka, Akash, the messenger continued. It's a long message. This is the message of the kings imprisoned by Jarasandha, who all hanker for your audience, having surrendered to your feet. Please bestow good fortune on these poor souls. Sukadev Goswami said, when the king's messenger had thus spoken, the sage of the demigods, Narada, suddenly appeared, to make it more dramatic, bearing a mass of golden matted locks on his head. Well, the supremely effulgent sage entered like the brilliant sun. You don't hear about that so often, do you? Huh? About Narada having like a mass of golden matted locks on his head. He was a, you know, just like he was a dreadlock type. Yeah? Golden, supremely effulgent sage entered into a rasta. He entered like the brilliant sun. Lord Krishna is the worshipable master of even planetary rulers like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Yet as soon as he saw that Narada Muni had arrived, he joyfully stood up along with his ministers and secretaries to receive the great sage and offer his respectful obeisances by bowing his head. Okay. You can do that under certain circumstances. But of course, better go on the ground under normal circumstances. See here, Lord Krishna is upholding principles of Dharma. He's worshipping the sage. And, of course, golden locks and effulgent and all. And he's offering his obeisances to Narada. Although, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? But because externally, he is performing the duties of a king, Krishna is now acting like a king. How amazing. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unlimited, who can do anything and everything, whatever he desires, and everything is pure and transcendental, is now limiting himself to act as a king. Meanwhile, in Vrindavan, yes, so I told you that Balaram was seated on the shoulders of the demon. And guess what? I guess you guessed this much. I guess you guessed that the demon was getting bigger and taking its original form. You guessed that, didn't you? I guess so. Did you guess it? You didn't guess. Oh. Balaram was being carried by that enormous demon. And then what happens? I raised a question before, a question that probably you now forgot. But what was that question? That burning question. What was the burning question? That is my burning question to you. What was the burning question? He wasn't sleeping after all. He sits up front. That helps, I guess. And also, she's fanning him. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm making jokes now, so it was too good to resist. What to do? Yes. And then, what happened? Yes, as Balaram was being carried by that terrible demon, Prahlambasura, Balaram didn't know what to do. It was Krishna who called out loud, Balaram! Remember who you are. And then Balaram remembered. Oh yeah, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh yeah, that's right. And I'm omnipotent and everything. I'm all powerful. So, you know, and then Balaram smashed the demon on his head. And the skull of the demon just cracked open. Demon fell to the ground. And at that time, it's the end of the story. The lions appear. Roars. And then all the titles are coming on the screen. And Balaram is played by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah? Yes. So like this, the whole pastime is taking place. So, with Prahlambasura's brains scattered all over the ground, probably it wasn't that much, you know, more muscle than brain, if you know what I'm talking about. It's quite typical. But whatever it was, that little brain of Prahlamba was now somewhere, you know, spread out over the ground. Then, meanwhile, we're returning to Dwarka, and the very intelligent Brahmana who had by now completed his long message, and then followed by a sudden appearance of Narada, then, you know, Narada was offered all respects and so on, and then Narada started speaking. So let's see what he said. But before Narada, Lord Krishna first expressed something. It is said that today the three worlds have attained freedom from all fear, for that is the influence of such a great personality as you, who travel at will throughout all the worlds. Just see. You know, when a great personality like Narada appears, everyone becomes fearless. Although usually we're all caught up in our anxieties. I hope nothing will go wrong. Some people, even any time they can cross their toes. I'm not the best at it, but hope it counts. Do you know? Did you know that Srila Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta to go and preach in the Western world? And you know what day it was? Oh yes, it was a Friday. And do you know what date it was? Do you know what date it was? Do you know? Who? You know. Cross your fingers, cross your toes. Friday the 13th. There are two possibilities. One is that Friday the 13th is the lucky day for the devotees. You know, because it's often opposite, right? What is night for the devotee, day for the materialist, and the other way around. So it could just be that Friday the 13th is the devotee's luckiest day, or the other option is that Prabhupada's influence counteracted whatever inauspiciousness was there. Whatever may be. Yes. So, but when Narada Muni appears, when a pure devotee appears, doesn't matter. Friday the 13th, doesn't matter. There's no reason to be in anxiety about anything, because all fear disappears. And with that, he brings Vaikuntha with him. Not only like he brings the Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, the state of no anxiety with him. Well, that's something, isn't it? Was there ever a moment that we were not in anxiety? Can you think of one? When you slept, someone said sleeping. But you know, you never, then you get dreams. And your dreams also, so many things go wrong. And sometimes even you're in, sometimes I travel a lot, and sometimes I stay in these old dark villas, you know, and then at night I'm there all alone, I hope. It's just old house. Yes. So Narada immediately, by his presence, took away all fear. I mean, that is significant. Well, as soon as Krishna reminded Balaram who he was, and Balaram smashed that demon, suddenly also all fear was gone. Because Balaram is himself the personification of the spiritual world. It is Balaram who is Vrindavan. Balaram becomes everything, right? We heard maybe on Balaram's appearance day, the bed, the shoes, all the paraphernalia. Did we also hear Vrindavan? That he becomes Vrindavan? Oh, did not hear it. Oh, lucky that I came. And lucky that I'm telling you. Yes, I am telling you. I am telling you this. And from where did I get this? You want to know? I will not tell you. But maybe I will tell you where I got it from. Yes. I got it from... Oh, what was that book called again? I learned this from Sachinanda Maharaj. You just act as if you don't know. Just to create the dramatic effect, right? Yes. What was it? Oh, I forgot what I was talking about. It says in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. No, I was playing. Chaitanya Bhagavat. Okay, can you remember that name? Chaitanya. Which book? Bhagavad. Very good. You are all very learned. You know everything. Yes. So anyway, then what happened is that so Balaram is the spiritual world. He's Vrindavan. So in this way, as Narada was bringing Vaikuntha, fearlessness, Balaram also. And as Pralambasura was killed, that same fearlessness, that was felt in Dwarka when Narada appeared in the middle of the assembly, that very same fearlessness was there in Vrindavan when Balaram killed Pralambasura. And the coward boys, they displayed this fearlessness. Can now it is my turn to see if you have studied the books properly, and can you give me one example where the cowherd boys are showing their fearlessness? Ooh, Agasura. How did you think of that? You must be very intelligent. So they, what happened? They see giant snake, think maybe it's snake, maybe it's mountain anyway. Krishna will save us. That mouth looks like a giant cave. Or that giant cave looks like a mouth. Those rocks hanging down at the entrance look like huge sharp teeth. Those sharp teeth look like rocks hanging down at the entrance. Anyway, Krishna will save us. Will he? Of course. They had no doubt. Okay. So a little water. I don't know if I'm going to read this whole Dwarka pastime, because now it is a lot. But then the idea comes up. Narada gives the suggestion that he should go there with the Pandavas, because they are old enemies of Jarasandha, and that they should disguise themselves like brahmanas. And so it came to pass. And these brahmanas, rather muscular brahmanas, these brahmanas that appear to have a mark of a bow in the shoulder. It's like in my shoulder you can see the mark of the hand luggage that's always hanging over the strap. Right? You know. Every Swami, you can check it out. That's the Swami. It's not the mark of the danda, it's the mark of the hand luggage. Right? I tell you, that we carry from airport to airport. Yes. So every profession, every trade brings with it his marks. You know, like for example, I have one disciple who is day and night on a computer, and guess what he wears? Goggles. I won't mention any names. Totally anonymous disciple who wears goggles. What can be said? So the point is, every profession, right, leaves its marks. What to do? Okay, back to Krishna in Dwarka and in Vrindavan. So these pastimes are existing parallel, and the moods of these pastimes are different. In Dwarka, Krishna's potency and power is known, and Krishna is worshipped for the same, for being the Supreme Lord. In Dwarka, sometimes Krishna acts as a king externally, but all are worshipping him as the Supreme Lord. In Vrindavan, nobody worships Krishna as the Supreme Lord, right? Only sometimes for a moment they remember. In Vrindavan, though, everyone still worships Krishna as the most amazing personality. Everyone still cares the most about Krishna and cares more about Krishna than about anybody else. Oh, my dear Lord Narayan, please accept our most humble obeisances. Have you seen Krishna? The gopis said after Krishna disappeared from the Rasa dance and they met Lord Narayan. Krishna had hidden himself in the form of Narayan, but he could not keep that hidden form very long in front of Srimati Radharani. He had to again reveal his original form of Krishna. So, in this way, now with Jamastami approaching, we remember that the pastimes in Dwarka are more open, that there Krishna's opulence and nature is open. And yet, the pastimes in Vrindavan, they are more covered. And these covered pastimes in Vrindavan, it is said, they are just like Krishna, who is returning in the evening with his herd of cows and calves, and that the hooves of all these cows are throwing up clouds of dust, and therefore the pastimes of Krishna are always covered by darkness. So therefore, there is a secret which will not be known on Jamastami to any outsider. As far as the outsiders are concerned, Krishna appeared in Dwarka as the full Supreme Personality of Godhead. Helmet, jewels, full dress and all, in front of Devaki, who offered him prayers. And Vasudev offered prayers. And so, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared in the jail of Kamsa in Mathura. Unknown to all. Unknown to all, Yasoda gave birth at the same time as Devaki. Unknown to all, even unknown to Yasoda, who was so overwhelmed by the labor of childbirth that she just fell asleep. She didn't even know what children she had given birth to. But the truth of the matter is, Yasoda had twins. She did. A boy and a girl. And when Vasudev came and took the boy, or left the boy behind and took the girl, then the two boys, the one from Mathura and the one from Vrindavan, they merged. They became one. And so, Krishna is simultaneously the son of Yasoda and the son of Devaki. Now, this we know the night before Jamastami. But tomorrow we act as if we don't know. But we will not tell anyone this secret. No. Because this is private. In-house. This, you don't tell anyone. It is a great guarded secret in our sampradaya. The Goswamis kept it hidden. The Bhagavatam kept it hidden. Only Rupa Goswami was hiding it in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, but he put the Lagu Bhagavatamrita full with so much tattva discussion that most people would fall asleep before they'd get to that point. So therefore, it was, you know, not easy to access even there. Only for the serious readers. For those who persevere, they might come to that point of reading that actually Krishna is the direct son of Yasoda. Yes. The cat is out of the bag. The secret is known. Oh, what do we do now? Remember, it is the secret of our sampradaya. So let us keep that quiet now. On the eve of Janmashtami. And then tomorrow, Krishna appeared in Mathura, full helmet, jewels, outfit, everything, four-armed forms. 1, 2, 3, 4. All like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the son of Devaki. And he will be known eternally as Devaki Nandan. Isn't it? Tomorrow. But today he is known as Yasodananda. Because he is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is fully manifesting his original form. And then expanded himself in Mathura and appeared before Devaki in a four-handed form. And that hidden truth is difficult to understand and will not be explained tomorrow on Janmashtami. Any questions? Any comments? Fill it up on the fridge, there's more.
For the internet, I have to repeat. So you made this point, Krishna is attracted by our devotional service. So for insignificant fallen conditioned souls trying to perform devotional service, is he also attracted?
On the fridge in front of my room. Sorry. You could have gone that way also, but that's shorter. Yeah, that way. Krishna is achyuta. He never fails. That's what I mean. He who never fails. He never fails to notice the smallest service rendered. That's the answer. And it's as simple as that. That Krishna is... It's like that. He is so kind, so merciful. Even when we are only a fraction of a percentage sincere, he sees that. Ah, there is a fraction of sincerity in this person. Even if that little fraction of sincerity is packed by all kinds of, you know, layers. Sometimes you get a gift. It is only this small. And then it is in a huge box, and in the box there's a smaller box, and then in the more, and it just kept on packing it. You got some gifts like that? I did. And in fact, I once saw someone get a gift like that. Indrajumna Maharaj. He came in Australia, and there was the Patapana and his wife are leading preachers. And she has a business and made a lot of money. You're from Australia, you know. She has a shop and she made a lot of money. And she sponsored Indrajumna Maharaj's tour in Australia. So then Indrajumna Maharaj forced me to go there with him. And he's very forceful. So he forced me to go there for prasadam. And I had to go. First, he brings flowers, and he goes, I guess I'm the first sannyasi who gave flowers to a lady. And it starts like this, you know, and I go, like, oh my God. Oh. Then in the end, he comes with this big package. And it's a huge golden box with ribbons and everything, and there's a go, you know. And then, okay, she opens it up, and there's another box, and another box, and another box. And in the end, it gets to like a tiny, a box, you know, a little box like this. Yes, and then she opens it up, and there's just this tiny little piece of cloth. And it turns out to be a little piece of cloth from Prabhupada's dhoti. Yeah. So it is like that. That there may be all these wrappings, a layer of envy, a layer of laziness, a layer of lust, a layer of, you know, anyway, you can put all the layers around yourself, a layer of dishonesty, a layer of anger, a layer of frustration, a layer of madness, a layer of an endless, all these layers are around it. But in the core, there is a little bit of devotional service. And Krishna says, ah, you brought me such a nice gift. You brought me a little devotional service. Thank you so much. I'm so happy with that. I'll never forget this. And he doesn't. So, Krishna remembers us for our service. And that's it. You know, sometimes we say, Neha vikramo nasasti pratyavichana vijati. That devotional service is never lost, and that it's like a spiritual bank account. Right? But that's only like figuratively speaking. What it really is, Krishna never forgets. He never forgets our service. Never. So whatever little service you've done, he'll remember forever. That will save us. Despite all the layers of envy, lust, madness, dishonesty, and God knows what other layers are there. Yeah.
So, we heard that Vrindavan is everywhere. It could be everywhere. It could be manifested everywhere. And yet, a lot of emphasis is put on going to the actual place, Vrindavan, where Krishna performs his pastimes. So, is it not a bit contradicting, like, that wherever Krishna is, like here, it could be Vrindavan. But
looks like they cannot hear you through the mic. At least Godrum is like trying to twist his head off his shoulders. Are you speaking? Did you turn it off?
It's on.
Yeah.
It's on. It's on.
Okay, speaking it.
So, again. And everywhere where Krishna is, where the form of Krishna is Vrindavan. But there is the Vrindavan. So, is it the same, or is there some difference? Is it conflicting? Do we have to go to the real Vrindavan? Do we?
Okay. Wherever Krishna manifests himself in the form of his deity or in the form of the name, there is Vrindavan. It's there. The only thing, the only difference is, it is there temporary, whereas the physical Vrindavan, right, it's always there, regardless. It stays there. And even when the whole universe is dissolved, that is not dissolved. It's still there. Well, these eternal dhams are still there, even after the universe is dissolved. That's the only difference. So yes, we can be with the deities and be in the dham. The deities bring the dham with them. So, no need to go to that dham. However, Prabhupada told Vibhu Chaitanya, the cook, that he told in front of Vibhu Chaitanya, not only to him, but to several devotees, that there was no need to go anywhere, that everything was in within the walls of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Yeah? And that's what Vibhu Chaitanya did with his life. He never went out. From the day he joined, he cooked for the deities, walked to his room, you know, to rest, chant, do whatever, and then go back to the kitchen and cook all the offerings for the deities, everything. He cooked all the seven offerings, he cooked all the sweets, whatever. He cooked everything from beginning to end. One man. And he did that for many, many years until in old age he couldn't do it any longer. But and he never went out of the gate from the day he joined, stayed within the walls of the Krishna Balaram Mandir and just served there. And the only time that he went out of the gate was out on the final procession when his body was taken to the burning ghat. That was it. So yes, in that way we can appreciate everything is there. But can we see it? Can we see it? And if we cannot see it, and then we go to that abode of Vrindavan, there's so much mercy there. Oh, that is just filled with mercy. So, why not go there? Somehow or other. Because if we do, we may get so much inspiration. It is very powerful. Undoubtedly. So that holy dham in Vrindavan is still a special place, still filled with so much special mercy, although everything is there with the deity. But can we access it? Can we see it? So, simultaneously one and different. Okay, so this is our adivas, this is our preparation for Janmashtami. Obviously, Janmashtami is a day to make an effort to focus on Krishna, to hear about Krishna, to chant Krishna's name, to perform transcendental plays. I happen to see a script lying right here. And it begins with lights off. Whoever is part of the play better collect the evidence before the spies will post it all over the internet. Let's see. Anyway, so then we'll do exactly what Krishna did with his associates, performing transcendental plays, meditating on Krishna, hearing about Krishna, cooking for Krishna, making all kinds of offerings to Krishna, and of course, we'll be having kirtan, plenty of kirtan. The program will be posted somewhere, is it? Yes. On the wall, on the notice board, usually in the corridor, because I haven't seen it yet. They told me it was ready 2 days ago. So I have no idea what's going to happen, don't ask me. But it will happen, and it will be transcendental. And now we will continue with just a little kirtan for half an hour, and then 9 o'clock, I think, we'll go to bed so you can get up early and chant Of course, if it goes to 9:15, it can happen, but let's see. But early to rise on Janmashtami and to chant extra rounds is one of those things that are recommended.